Blog Talk Radio.
Laughing Eyes Kennel presents The Gypsy Musher with Iditarod and Yukon Quest veteran Hugh Neff. The Gypsy Musher will share stories from the trail, fortune-telling, and memories of mushing years past. Follow The Gypsy Musher on Twitter and visit our website at gypsymusher.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto calling in from Willow, Alaska, and on the line calling in from fresh off the Yukon Quest in Whitehorse, Yukon Territory, Canada, Hugh Neff. Hugh, how's it going?
Hotel room here with Nicole and Walter. He's chilling out on the carpet, giving me a big goofy smile. And I've already started, you know, getting ready for our dinner. We just did our training run this afternoon, and I'll be running them every day here until we leave on Sunday to head back for Tok.
So, of course, we're going to get into the quest itself, but tell us about Whitehorse. What's happening there? Have you guys had a finishing banquet yet, or what's on schedule?
No, the finishing banquet is Saturday. You know, there's still a bunch of teams that still have to come in that will be coming in here today or tomorrow, and hopefully they all get in by the time of the banquet, which it's looking like they should. They're all packed up together. But it's one of the best banquets I go to every year is the finishing banquet in Whitehorse. They put on a really good show here. And we have, you know, Meet the Mushers is tomorrow night, and we have other events scheduled, you know, for fans to come out and meet us and talk dog and all that sort of stuff.
So, did you get a chance to see the show on Discovery a couple of weeks ago, Klondike?
Oh, yeah. I've been making some comments about how inaccurate a lot of it was, but, you know, that's Hollywood for you. A lot of these modern-day reality TV shows are not what they seem to be either, for sure.
Does Dawson City and, of course, Whitehorse resemble anything like they showed on the show, or is it all glitz and glamour these days?
Well, you know, Whitehorse is a government town. It's the capital, so a lot of government workers here. Mining's huge here. Tourism's huge. Dawson, to me, is just like the old days. They try to replicate the past. And that's why I do this race every year. It's not because I want to be a great quest musher or champion or any of that sort of stuff. I'm in love with the quest trail, dude. And that's why every year when I get out here, I think about the past. I think about the vagabonds of the day, the Soapy Smiths and those type of folks that were probably out causing trouble in the trails that we're traveling on now, just goofing off with our dogs. There's a lot of history to them. So I really in my mind go back and pretend like what it must have been like 100 years ago or over that. But this trail is definitely, I just love it, and I can't wait to do it every year. It never bores you, and there's always something interesting that you're going to come across sooner or later.
So let's get into the race itself. I know the latest reports that they've been saying out on the trail where the guys and gals still are, it's been minus 50 degrees Fahrenheit to the last few days. How was it? Because you've been in Whitehorse for several days now. What was the weather like as you were coming in towards the finish line the last half of the race?
Oh, you could definitely see your breath, you know, when you open your mouth, so that's usually a sign that it's getting pretty cold. But it's like the old saying, you know, mushers always say a good dog is a good dog. Well, for me, cold is cold, and you deal with it. That's why we live here. I've got great Canada Goose gear that I'm wearing. I've been snug as a bug in a rug, and got some nice thick beaver mitts that Aaron Reddington made for me, and I've been comfy and nice. Hat that I was given as a gift from my friends in Kotzebue after the 440 race this last April. So I've done 23 of these races. You know, I think I've gotten a little bit better over the years of taking care of myself, and that's why I've been doing better in the standings. You can tell a lot about mushers and how good they are, not by how they're just caring for their dogs, but how they care for themselves. I had to deal with, the horrible incident with Brent this year, and I feel for him, but I've been there too, and not only, you know, have I wiped out a bunch in this race because it was quite slippery out there, but I've also been sleep deprived and, you know, a little bit low on drinking fluids, and that can all snowball, and a little mistake or problem can get big quicker. And unfortunately for Brent, he had I think we're all still reeling from that incident, and we all feel for him and we all wish him the best. But in other respects, it's going to make him that much stronger as he goes on in life. And Lord knows I've had some tragedies along the way that I've used to, you know, not only learn from, but to make myself stronger.
So on the Yukon Quest website at the beginning of the race, they said that a typical quest should take anywhere from 9 to 11 days. And it really looked like the top 2, 3, 4 mushers were really flying down the trail with Alan, and then, of course, you coming in second after Brent had his mishap. Were you guys going that much faster this year than in previous years, or did it just look that way?
Oh, yeah, the trail was definitely rock hard. You know, there was that rain a couple weeks ago, and then it got cold. So it was like being in a luge run or something. It was really fast. Got to give Alan credit. He's just so dialed in as far as himself to sleep 20 minutes. And then he's up and at it and ready to go. He doesn't waste a second out there. And I know we probably freak out a lot of the old school quest mushers who just can't understand how we're doing it, but they're not here. And I always laugh when I see people critiquing mushers from their couches when they have no idea what we're even up to, and they don't even know how our dogs are running. It would be one thing, right, if we had video and people could see how beautiful the teams are looking, but we as mushers, you know, I've done this race 14 times. Alan, even though he's a little bit newer to this race, he's been mushing for longer than myself, and, you know, he's an athlete in many respects, played hoops in college, and just an all-around, you know, pretty amazing guy. The more I watched him perform this year, the more he really sort of reminded me of a younger Charlie Boulding. He's a country boy, you know, and Charlie was as well, and is, and they're wily guys, and they're tough to compete against because they're good at what they do. And I knew going into this race that it would take a miracle for me to hang with them, this being a year where I had 7 newer dogs that really had never been on the trail before. But we did our best, and I'm proud of all my kids, and they're going to be even better in the future because the quest is very demanding psychologically, not physically, psychologically. And if you know where you're going as a human or as a dog, that's a huge advantage. And that's why I feel good about the future, because I've always have at least half my team are veterans every year, and that makes a big difference.
So
it's all about attitude.
Let's talk a little bit about the trail, Hugh, because I know that a lot of the same trail that you've gone down on the quest is going to be very similar in terms of conditions on this year's Iditarod. Of course, that's the talk of the town, not only on social media with the fans, but also to a lot of mushers and what to expect on the Iditarod with the possible change to Fairbanks and, you know, all of that goes into it. You had mentioned that it was like a luge run. Can you describe that a little bit to just your layperson fan? How does that change mushing compared just, you know, to a normal trail, snowpack trail that is well-groomed?
Well, because you got a, you know, a wise musher is going to be on that brake pad slowing the team down. You let that team open up, what's going to happen is your percentage of a dog having an injury, whether it be a wrist or a shoulder, goes up. So percentage-wise, it makes sense to slow them down, take it easy, keep them at a nice, safe, consistent speed. They might be capable of going a lot faster, but it's not a good idea. And then as they slow down, once the miles get accumulated, say after 300 to 400 miles, they're going to go at a more regular momentum, then you can, you know, lay off the brake pad and get out the ski pole and start skiing and kicking or whatever you want to do to help out the team. So folks are always like, how the heck are you guys so much farther in front of everybody else? But they don't realize Alan Moore's a manimal. I mean, that dude is 56 years old, and I can't think of another dog musher that's even, you know, there's some in his league, you know, the Ken Andersons, the Ramey Smiths and the like, but for you know, consistency, that guy's just, and it really shows in his you know, all that he's accomplished the last few years. He really is a big part of his team. I was skiing with one pole, and that's just the way I've been doing it for years. And what happened was it totally messed me up, because only having that one ski pole, skiing on the right side, messed up my body, and my whole back left side of all the muscles stiffened up. And I was drinking fluids, staying hydrated, which is very important as a musher. Even if you don't want to drink, you're going to make yourself drink, because it's what you have to do. The Arctic air sort of lulls you into thinking, oh, I'm not thirsty. But you have to force yourself to drink, because you know, it has repercussions if you don't. So that being said, I had some major issues with my muscles and my back, and I learned after that you got to make sure to use both sides of your body as far as, you know, working out, because we're kicking, running, pulling the whole time, man, once the team slowed down a little bit. And there's a reason why you see a lot of the top mushers are in such great shape, because if you want to be competitive, you have to be.
Right. So you had mentioned to slow the team down, and I know you finished with several dogs less than you started with. Is it better on a longer run with those types of trails to have a smaller team, 8-9 dogs versus the complement of 14 that you start with?
Definitely, I would say an 8-dog team is going to go as fast as like an 11-dog team. Maybe a 13 compared to 8, there's going to be a big difference, especially in the hills. And the Quest has quite a few of those. But I went into this race knowing I was going to be dropping a lot of these dogs, because they're all, I had a bunch of yearlings, 2-year-olds, and then of course I had Wally, the 9-year-old here, who I knew wasn't going to be a big part of the team muscle, but I just brought him. He's sort of like my pacifier out there, and he knew, you know, where we were going the whole time. But there came a point where I was getting close to Eagle, and I was just thinking, you know, this dog hasn't pulled in a couple hundred miles. Maybe it's time for him to take a breather and get a flight to Dawson. And I was just proud of him. Just, you know, you can imagine this dog's 12,000-mile race. And every time I say that, I just get a big smile on my face, because I can't think of another dog that's done that many. And, yeah, I'm definitely a lucky guy to have him. And there's a reason why he's in the hotel room, because he deserves it.
Very cool.
The funny thing is our host family, or our host hotel here, Canada's Best Value Inn, the locals call it the Riverview, right along the Yukon here, they wanted me to bring my whole team into the hotel room, and I was just looking at them like, you people are crazy. But we brought like 3 or 4 of the dogs in the first couple nights that we were here, and now I got the team out at Tamara Reynolds' place out there at Annie Lake, and she's been kind enough to let me keep them out in a pen out there, and that's where I've been training them. You know, we used to live out there when Tamara and I were dating back in the day. So the dogs are liking it out there, because they're familiar territory and they're getting to see all their old friends and all that.
So who's with you there in Whitehorse? You?
Nicole's been helping out with everything. She's been great. You know, we've got a lot going on, not only with racing the Quest, getting ready for Iditarod. I've got a book signing tomorrow. We've got a lot of sponsor promotional stuff that we're doing. So it's a busy time of year, but we really enjoy what we're doing, and we also, you know, make sure to get out at night and visit with the locals, hang out at one of the bars, do some dancing. And I think it behooves all mushers. It's great that we're all competitive and we're all going to take care of our dogs once the race is over, but you got to get involved with the locals, whether it's in the villages or at the finish lines or the starting line, and interact and you know, they want to see some of your dogs as well. I always make it a point in the Quest to try to stop it at as many checkpoints and, you know, little rest areas as I can, just to say hi to everybody, because they want to be a part of the race as much as you.
So I know we have talked about this in the past. What about fan turnout for the Quest versus Iditarod? How was it this year?
Oh, it was good. Wherever I was at, there were people coming out. You know, a lot of these people I've known for over a decade now, so we're all just what we call visiting. But it's much more remote than the Iditarod. There's not as many native villages along the trail route. So that's the beauty of it. That's why I love the Quest, because it's just you, the dogs, and the land, and it makes you a more complete musher, I believe. And you have to be able to run your dogs in a fashion where this year I could get away with dropping dogs, you know, because it's such a quick trail. But typically, the team that does the best in this race is the one that's going to have numbers at the end because
right.
they haven't been going too fast. Where I did ride, it's more of a, you know, fast the whole race nowadays.
And you just kind of
hopping. So many checkpoints.
Right, you're just kind of hopscotching down the trail from checkpoint to checkpoint. And I know we spent a lot of time comparing the two races on this show over the last few years, so we won't get into that. But let's talk a little bit about Iditarod. You're about, 2.5 weeks away before all of the chaos gets started there with the banquet and all that. But here, this coming Monday or Tuesday, they're supposed to make a decision on whether they're going to leave from Willow or Fairbanks. My first question to you, Hugh, did you leave from Fairbanks when they ran in 2003?
No, I did not. My first Iditarod was 2004.
2004, so you haven't seen that part of the trail.
No, I followed it. I was actually staying down with Lance and Timmy Osmar. No, that was a different year. But I followed Iditarod that year. It's looking like it's going to go that way. I'm not, you know, really haven't been talking to too many people involved with that yet. I know Mark Nordman and his crew are holding back, just waiting to see if there's any weather change or what have you. But if it does start from Fairbanks, obviously it's going to be a lot flatter race. I'm all over it if it does, man. That's my territory. I'm totally into going and saying hi to friends in Tanana and Manly, and I've got Yukon River dogs, so if they want to start from Fairbanks, I'm all over it. And my team's dialed in right now, so my whole game plan for this year wasn't just about doing well in the quest. You know, I'm pretty geared up for Iditarod this year, and I'm looking forward to getting back out there and going at it here soon.
Is there a significant amount of difference in mileage going from that way compared to from down here in Willow?
I haven't even looked at it, Robert. Not really sure.
Okay.
Just like I said, you're gonna eliminate a lot of those, you know, the gorge and the steps and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
I think it's a lot more traveling on the mushers, actually, because we still have to come down there for meetings and banquets and ceremonial and all that, and then turn around and drive back to Fairbanks. So it's a lot of back and forth. But, you know, I bless the people, the volunteers, the officials, the guys putting in the trail and stressing out right now, because I think a lot of mushers take what they do for granted, and we should all commend them for just doing whatever they can to make this race happen. Because, you know, there's issues with weather on the coast as well and what that trail is going to be like. So it's all up in the air right now. I just pray to God that we have this race and we can put on, you know, some type of event for all of Alaska to enjoy, because it's a big part of the Alaskan mystique, you know.
Well, you know, I know it's never been canceled, and I know that the Junior Iditarod, which is part of the same family, they just announced yesterday that it is a go, and starting from Martin's Place and on to Yetna and back, just 150 miles, but obviously if that one can go, the big boy can go as well. You know, we've seen a lot of pictures on how it's looked in the past. I know there's a picture from, I believe, 1989 or so of a trail that's pretty much just an ice patch down the trail and then, you know, perfectly clear on both sides, and they're pretty much running on dirt and rocks. Have you experienced that for long distances, and how do you think the dogs do in something like that?
Yeah, you know, it's a little bit more stressful on the joints and the wrists and all that. You go to more mellow pace. You just, you know, maintain. You just want to get through it safely. It can be tough on your runner plastic on the sleds and everything. Farewell burns, you know, the common place where this usually happens. If we do go through that area, that would make sense for a lot of people to have sleds waiting in McGrath, Nikolai, Takotna, somewhere in there, just in case their sleds get trashed. The funny thing about my sled this year is the sled I used for the quest, my buddy Darren Nelson from Kotzebue made it. Darren's John Baker's cousin, you know, Iditarod champ. And anyhow, Darren Nelson made me the sled about 3 years ago as my Iditarod finishing sled. And then 3 years later, I'm using it for the quest.
Sled.
So it's just showing you how dialed in we're getting with dog mushing and how we're, you know, simplifying everything we do.
Right, yeah, I remember that slip.
We're becoming faster.
So let's talk a little bit about the Iditarod dogs. How many of the dogs that you ran with the Quest are you going to run in Iditarod? Have you thought about that already?
I think like 10 or 11. Most of the ones that we dropped from the Quest were fairly young, and the Eagle Summit Rosebud takes a lot out of a dog that's not used to something like that. But they're nice, solid, sprinty, you know, Yukon River dogs, and dogs that are basically every dog that I finished with, their mom was Annie, you know, Walter's sister, so that was pretty cool. And then her lineage goes back to Lester Earhart stuff, a dog named Slim, and who I changed Slim's name to Piccolo, and then their mother is a dog named Colby. So it was pretty cool. It's very dialed-in team. The rest of the dogs all I have is a dog named Isaac. It's a really nice three-year-old I got from Josh Kadzow. And then we'll have to see about the rest of the team. But I'm feeling very, very confident in our abilities to compete with the big boys this year.
So a fan favorite.
And I think possibly it being on a different race route is going to help as well, because that way those guys can't you know, their dogs are going to be on a new path as well, and maybe those great leaders are going to have to think a little bit more outside of the box than what they're normally used to. I do remember when they did this race last time, Sorley won the race. So what I'm going to be doing, if they do change the race route, like every other musher, I'll be going back to 2003 and checking out, you know, run rest schedules and all that sort of stuff, just to see how Sorley performed so well.
The last time I guess he did win that race was then, and of course he's back this year to run it again, whether it goes in Fairbanks or Willow. A fan favorite is on your team now, a dog named Bodie. I know you and I have talked a lot about him. How are you doing?
Bodie.
I know he's running in lead now, right?
Yeah, dude, I really messed up in this race, and I apologize to everyone, especially Bodie, but I put him in lead like the second to last day, and all of a sudden it was like, I don't know, we're going a mile or two faster, and I'm thinking, holy cow, what did I wait so long to put him up in lead for? But he's another Annie pup. The father's a Hans Gott dog named Tank, and Bodie's who we've been breeding our yard with, and he's just phenomenal, and I can't wait to show him off.
He's a wild. Is he still as wild as he was a couple of Iditarod?
Oh yeah, man! You remember back in the day when he was a puppy, it took two or three people to get booties on him. It was just pure energy. You could feel the nerves just pulsing. He's just got so much energy. I don't think people really realize how amazing sled dogs are, especially the top of the line ones. I mean, they have so much energy. It's just an honor to be able to do what we do with them. And I really feed off of them, and then they feed off of my energy, and I think that's why we do so well.
So any parting words for this year's Quest? I know that you've done a lot of interviews. I watched a lot of them on YouTube and, of course, read up on them on the other social media. Any parting words for this year? You know, it's time to think about next year, I'm sure, as soon as Iditarod's done.
You're feeding dogs and went down to the local tattoo shop and got a new tat, and all it says is YQ on it. And every year I'm surprised that more mushers aren't doing this race because, man, it is so much fun. And I just feel like my soul and this trail are, you know, like compadres. And every time I'm out on the trail here, I feel like I've been here forever. And I just can't wait to do it again in the future. But right now, that's the, you know, Quest for us is done with. And right now, soul focus is on Iditarod and putting on a show like I've never done before.
And for folks that don't remember, you did not run Iditarod last year. You were over in Sweden, Norway, running the Finnmark, right?
Yeah, and that's what's cool. I mean, I'm back to do it, and it's going to be cool to see all my buddies from Scandinavia that I was racing with in Finnmark last year, and all those guys have promised me that next year they're going to come and do the Quest, so the Quest could definitely use that influx of European might on the trail here. We had one fellow, Torsten, from Sweden this year, and he came in right after Ken and John yesterday. I got to see him come in. So it's looking good, and really pumped up to be doing Iditarod again. You know, Joe Reddington is my ultimate mushing hero, and whenever I'm out there, I'm seeking to prove him to be the genius that he was, and take a kid from Chicago and give him the initiative to want to do what I do. Joe Reddington was definitely the heart and soul of what Iditarod is all about.
That he is. So, Hugh, when are you heading down this way? I know you're going to stop off at home in Tok. When are you heading down towards the rather snowless Matsu Valley?
Well, I got to do testing. You know, we got EKGs that I have to do with Jan Bullock and Fairbanks here next week, and then we'll be heading down there soon thereafter. I'm going to be doing some book signings in the area. I got one at the Millennium, and I think I have another one that's going to be set up here this week. So we'll definitely get to see you, Robert. And again, I want to thank you for making those harnesses, dude. People have been giving them really good comments, and the dogs really like them. So I really appreciate you doing that for us. And we'll definitely make sure to get together with you and my buddy Dave Shearer, and we'll go out and have some dinner somewhere. And your lovely wife, of course, too.
Of course, we got to invite her along. Hugh, we're just about out of time. I'm surprised we made it through the show without losing a connection, since I'm calling you on Skype to your hotel room. So I will see you in a week or so when you head down this way, and I'm sure we'll know a decision very quickly on what's going to happen with the Iditarod, on where they're going to start it. So until then, enjoy the time down there, Hugh. Enjoy the banquet, and we'll see you soon, okay?
All right. Good to hear from you, Robert. You take care now.
Likewise. Hugh Neff, second place this year in the Yukon Quest, heading towards Iditarod in just a couple of weeks. We'll talk to you guys soon. Goodbye.